Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing Canto 2, Chapter 12, and we just finished a section. We're just beginning the second section of this chapter. The chapter is the killing of the Agasura demon, and the first section is a very celebrated section in a number of ways. One of the most celebrated verses from that section is the one that ends Krita Punya Punja. Familiar with that one? No? Very vaguely? Prabhupada liked it a lot. It's celebrating the great fortune of the cowherd boys to be able to play with Krishna. And then there's a series of verses that describe what the boys would do when they would take the calves into the forest, basically play with this and that and the other, and really nice things that boys can do together. And then this verse that says the gyanis, those pursuing Brahmasukh, their realization of Krishna is limited to that. Then the second line is those who are in Dasya Bhakti, the devotees, they realize Krishna as the supreme. Those who are materialists, they see him as an ordinary person. But the cowherd boys, they're playing with him. They're playing with the absolute truth, like a dear friend. So how fortunate are they after many, many lifetimes? And then the next verse is the gyanis. So gyanis, yogis, bhaktas, karmis, and then the cowherd boys are in their category of their own. Now when speaking about the gyanis, Shukadev Goswami says, not just the cowherd boys, all the residents of Vrindavan. All the residents of Vrindavan, they have the opportunity to be with Krishna and see Krishna day in and day out. And the gyanis cannot even see a speck of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in their perfection of meditation after many, many arduous lifetimes. So the superlative position of Braja Prem is the message. Then this next set of verses that we're reading, Agasura enters. After all that sweetness, my dear King Parikshit, this is text 13, 10, 12, 13, my dear King Parikshit, thereafter there appeared a great demon named Agasura, whose death was being awaited even by the demigods. The demigods drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. The demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. So this is one of the final chapters Prabhupada translated. So it's his translation and purport. One may ask, how Krishna's pastimes could be interrupted by a demon? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this question by saying that although the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed by the cowherd boys could not be stopped unless they stopped the transcendental pleasure of their various activities, they could not eat their lunch. Therefore, at lunchtime, Agasura appeared by the arrangements of Yogamaya, so that for the time being they could stop their activities and take lunch. Changing varieties are the mother of enjoyments, the mother of enjoyment. The cowherd boys would continuously play, then stop, then again enjoy in a different way. Therefore, every day, a demon would come and interrupt their sporting pastimes. The demon would be killed, and then the boys would engage again in their transcendental pastimes. Elsewhere it's said that the primary demons that Krishna killed, they're mentioned in Krishna book. There's many, many, many others that are not mentioned in Krishna book or 10th canto Bhagavatam. And practically speaking, every day at least two or three. One around 11 o'clock, the other around 4 o'clock. One was a signal, okay, time for lunch. And then the other was, okay, now it's time to go back to Raja. And it was necessary to make a break in their playing because they were having too much fun. And there's many other amazing descriptions. We heard some in chapter 8 where Krishna and the cowherd boys were playing. This is the day of the knocking over the twin Arjuna trees. And Krishna was totally unfazed. Little boy. The Damodara Leela, he's very little. And so after that, the boys went playing. And Mother Jashoda wanted Krishna to have lunch. And so she sent Rohini. And Krishna told the boys, just ignore her. Let's play. We're having a good time. So she tried and tried. She went back and said, he's not listening. You're going to have to go. I'll finish the cooking. So then there's another pastime of getting Krishna to go back, and she told some stories. She tried this, tried that, tried the other thing. Finally, Krishna went back. So this is before they were taking care of the calves. Krishna loves the cowherd boys. He loves the gopis. He loves the gopas. He loves his mother and father, but he does naughty things with mother and father, because somehow he likes to be chastised. That's another Leela. So, Agasura showed up by the arrangements of Yogamaya. Isn't that interesting? Vishwanath writes, the Leela Shakti, Prabhupada has put Yogamaya, but he put the Leela Shakti of the Lord, seeing that the bliss of the boys from playing was increasing and increasing at every moment, and it was not possible for them to stop playing, and seeing that without stopping playing they would not eat, and that the eating time had already passed, and seeing that it was also necessary to kill the demon, brought Agasura demon towards the boys, inspiring him, Agasura, through Paramatma. Agasura could not tolerate the fun the boys were having. The playing gave them pleasure, but gave him suffering. The devatas who drank amrita were afraid of death from the demon, and therefore were waiting for his death. Or an alternative translation is, Agasura could not tolerate the playing, which was meditated upon by the devatas, which alone gave them desire to maintain their lives, though they already drank amrita. So just a different way of translating the Sanskrit that's very nice. Jiva Goswami writes, Ataha, that's the word that begins this verse. It's Ataha, indicates a different topic with a different rasa from the previous topic. Agha suddenly came in front of them. Abhya Patat. He could not tolerate seeing their joyful playing. The devatas, though they had drunk nectar, were fearful of death, and thus waited for his weak point, Antaha, thinking, when and how will he die? Paragraph, or the meaning can be, even though the devatas were fully absorbed, Pita, in liberation, Amrita, they awaited his death. They wanted to live long in order to see the pastimes of Krishna. They were without death, Amarai, because of accepting bodies for pastimes. Or the subtle and gross bodies were without destruction. It is said, gives a reference from doesn't say where. Oh, yes. Nisringa Tapani Upanishad. Mukta api lilaya vigraham kritva bhajante. Translation. Even the liberated accept forms and participate in the pastimes. The devatas were expecting pratikshate, the pastimes. In other words, there's different participants in Krishna's pastimes, and one of them are devatas. Some of the devatas or expansions, partial expansions of them took birth, as was instructed by Vishnu to Brahma. And some of them participated by observing. But even those, the indication is that in some cases at least, these are in spiritualized forms. Because of accepting bodies for pastimes, they were without death. That's another reading of the verse. The text 14, next. There's four verses that describe Agasura setting up, getting ready to kill. Agasura, who had been sent by Kamsa, was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, when he came and saw Krishna at the head of the cowherd boys, he thought, quote, this Krishna has killed my sister and brother, Putana and Bakasura. Therefore, in order to please them both, I shall kill this Krishna along with his assistants, the other cowherd boys. And the only commentary is Jiva Goswami saying, because they killed my brother and sister, I will kill them. Text 15. Agasura thought, quote, if somehow or other I can make Krishna and his associates serve as the last offering of sesame and water for the departed souls of my brother and sister, then the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, for whom these boys are the life and soul, will automatically die. If there is no life, there's no need for the body. Consequently, when their sons are dead, naturally all the inhabitants of Braja will die. And Prabhupada doesn't have a purport, but Vishwanath does. Seeing Krishna and the others, Agasura, the younger brother of Putana, she's called Baki, and Bakasura, Baki and Bakasura, began to consider, the word for consider, it comes up several times Vyavasya. So he began to consider. And then this and the next two texts, 14, 15, 16, we're on 15 now. His commentary says these are his thoughts. Vyavasya. Quote, this person has killed my older sister, Putana Baki, and my brother Baka. Therefore, I will kill him on their behalf as a pinda offering. Pinda? Oblations. Respectful oblations. Along with, so I'll offer them into the sacrificial fire. Along with his followers. If Krishna and the other boys become the offering to the pretas, pretas are ghosts, for my brother and sister, Nanda and the other inhabitants of Braj will naturally die. If the life has left the body, do we have to worry about the bodies? Those who live, ye prana bhutaha, those who live through their children, te praja savaha, therefore if Krishna, their child, dies, they will die without our even having to kill them. And Jiva Goswami's one-line commentary is, nashta sama means almost dead. And then text 16. We're going to go through 18. There's very little commentary. After thus deciding that crooked Agasur assumed the form of a huge python as thick as a big mountain and as long as 8 miles, or one yojana. Having assumed this wonderful python's body, he spread his mouth like a big cave in the mountains and lay down on the road, expecting to swallow Krishna and his associates, the cowherd boys. Vishwanath writes, thinking in this way, Agasura lay on the path in order to devour Krishna. He was a yojana in length, or 8 miles. He was fat as a huge mountain, his mouth spread open like a cave. And Sanatan writes similarly, resolving, or vyavasya, so it was contemplating, now it's resolving. At that moment, tada, he spread himself out without moving, since he was a cheating killer, kalaha, who could easily swallow them by all tricky means. He would swallow them all at once, since he was a python. He was cruel, with a proclivity for eating such boys. In two more verses, text 17, his lower lip rested on the surface of the earth, and his upper lip was touching the clouds in the sky. The borders of his mouth resembled the sides of a big cave in a mountain, and the middle of his mouth was as dark as possible. His tongue resembled a broad traffic way. His breath was like warm wind, and his eyes blazed like fire. Sounds pretty scary. Again, Vishwanath writes, his lower lip touched the earth, upper lip reached the clouds, front of the mouth was like two mountain caves, the interior of the mouth was dark, the tongue was like a wide road, his breath was like burning fire, and his glaze was like a forest fire. Jiva Goswami, one sentence, he had hot nostrils, breathing harsh wind, and hot eyes blazing like fire. And the final verse, text 18. Upon seeing this demon's wonderful form, which resembled a great python, the boys thought that it must be a beautiful scenic spot in Vrindavan. Thereafter, they imagined it to be similar to the mouth of a great python. In other words, the boys, unafraid, thought that it was a statue made in the shape of a great python for the enjoyment of their pastimes. And Srila Prabhupada's purport, some of the boys, upon seeing this wonderful phenomenon, thought that it was in fact a python, and they were fleeing from the spot. But others said, quote, why are you fleeing? It is not possible that a python like this is staying here. This is a spot of beauty for sporting. Unquote. This is what they imagined. And Vishwanath writes, some of the boys, on seeing Agasura, started to run away, thinking it was a big snake. Other boys, however, considered that Agasura was one of the wonders of Vrindavan. They comforted their fearful friends by saying, oh, fools, a snake can never be this big. It is something created by the Lord out of clay, so that we can appreciate the splendor of Vrindavan even more. He has made it in the form of a huge snake with a big, gaping snout. In this way, they thought of the Lord's creation as something like the gaping mouth of the serpent. Uprekshatan, without fear, Lilaya. And two very short comments, again, Jiva Goswami. The word he indicates certainty. They compared it to a snake as a jest. And Sanatan Goswami says exactly the same thing. Now, I assume chronologically, Jiva Goswami wrote after Sanatan Goswami wrote. And that he's just following his uncle. And that's it for our reading. The next scene is how the cowherd boys speak to one another and how they respond to what they see. And the pastime continues. Interesting that the demigods knew, it doesn't say they knew by name, but at least they knew of this demon, and they were fearful because he was powerful, that the demon be killed. They were anxious and fearful. And something that we're hearing in the morning discussion, we're hearing a nice section from Bhagavat Sandarbha about the feature of Bhagavan, and Bhagavan has bhagas. He has enormous potencies. So there's his form, and there's the potencies of his form, his swarup and swarup shakti. And one of the shaktis of his swarup shakti is it keeps illusion far from him, and it keeps illusion far from those who are in contact with him. And one of the features of illusion is fear. Now the cowherd boys, they're one could say they're foolish, or one could say they're fearless. Now there is such a thing in worldly existence of fearless that's foolish. You know, go in the middle of a highway, just walking across the highway when traffic is moving like zoom, zoom, zoom. and, you know, Krishna will protect me because I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Or, anyway, something that's foolish rather than the position of fearlessness of a pure devotee. So fear arises from bodily conception, and bodily conception is an essence of ignorance, or ignoring who we really are, ignoring Krishna. So Krishna dispels all that. And in the case of those who are demons, it's one of the concluding verses of the entire Bhagavatam, 12th canto. It's just Krishna's nature. Wherever there is sin, he eradicates it. So when Krishna was present on earth, that's what the sages of Naimisharanya say to Sutta. When Krishna was on this earth, everything was auspicious. But now he's gone. So where is auspiciousness taking shelter? So it's taking shelter in the Bhagavatam, according to the reply of Sutta. It's the same. The hearing of the pastimes of Krishna is the same as being in association with Krishna. And inauspiciousness is driven away just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or by seeing Krishna. And like the cowherd boys, they were constantly in this good fortune of seeing Krishna. So they were fearless. Some were inclined, it's a snake, let's go the other way. They started running. So there's discussion coming up, as we heard already. Krishna will always protect us. What do you have to run for? Maybe it's this and maybe it's that, and we don't know, and let's go explore. Krishna will protect us. Now, we shouldn't be so cavalier or carefree, but it's being, let's say, living in this material world, get to practical application stuff. Living in this material world has its risks. And whether you do this or you do that, there's risks. So there's risk evaluation or risk management. But the safest place where there's least a risk is to be engaged in doing that which you know Krishna wants. Like sometimes the kirtaniers say the safest place is being in kirtan. It's a common saying amongst kirtaniers. Of course, one could be in maya during kirtan. One can be looking at the member of the opposite sex in some improper manner and be developing attachment and so forth and so on, and even in the midst of kirtan. But the purification of kirtan is very, very special. And it does help control the mind and senses. But so the place of safety then is to be in the internal potency. And when you're in the internal potency, there's also some risk, but the risk is being addressed by Krishna's internal potency. If you're engaged in known activities that are pleasing to Krishna, and the intention with which you're doing is to please Krishna, you're protected. That's safe. That's the place of shelter where you're safe. Like the child in the arms of the mother. It doesn't mean the child won't die as long as just the child stays in the arms of the mother. The child can also die. But it's the place of safety. Being in Krishna's association through the medium of devotional service is the position of safety. And that which is the best means for engaging in devotional service and furthering that shelter-taking process is Bhagavad Dharma method, name, fame, qualities, pastimes of the personality of Godhead, hearing, chanting, remembering. That's the essence of the bhakti process that awakens bhakti and further polishes bhakti. Again, it's not that we won't die and we won't get old and we won't get diseases and stuff, but we're in a position of safety if we die. We're in a position of safety if whatever the onslaught of material existence comes, we're in the position of safety. Protect. Agasura here is being described by Acharyas as being clever or cheating, appearing in a certain way, although the intention is malicious. So Krishna protects his devotees from those kind of predatorial forces. They're there. Pretentious people that have malicious intention are there. Krishna will protect us. We shouldn't be foolish, but we should also know that we don't need to be fearful. Krishna will protect us. This whole description in Krishna Samhita of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he really gets into it, describing these killing of demons in Braja as very significant for sadhakas. In the pastime itself, Krishna is demonstrating his readiness to protect us from our own shortcomings and tendencies, as well as from outside of us, risks and obstacles on the path of bhakti. But the pastime itself, just hearing the pastime itself, there's potency to give that protection. Although we may not be meditating, I really want to hear that pastime because then I'll get protected from this obstacle or that obstacle. And that's a really big one for me. Whether we understand that or not, there's a potency in these pastimes that helps remove obstacles for sadhakas. So it's good to hear a Krishna book, or it's good to hear 10th canto pastimes. It's better than good to read the earlier cantos and understand the nature of Krishna, the omnipotence of Krishna, the power of Krishna, to get a proper understanding of the dynamic of what's going on. So the main activity in Braja is the sweetness of Krishna's loving exchange with his devotees. And over there, something secondary, it's not superfluous, but it's certainly secondary, and incidental is a word that's also used by our acharyas. Killing of demons, it's incidental. Here is being described as just a good break, and they're playing so they can go and have lunch. Because otherwise they just would skip lunch. Kids play and play and play and play. When Mother Rohini went to get Krishna and Balaram, Krishna told them, "Don't listen." And they follow Krishna because they want to follow. They love Krishna. They're having a good time, but also he's their leader. And he says, you know, don't pay attention. So they didn't pay attention. She was ineffective. Because when Krishna wants, who can stop him? But the love of Mother Yashoda brought Krishna to stop. She did some tricky things. She even told some lies. She knew that he liked her little boy. He liked to be charitable. So she lied and said, "Oh, the moon is passing through your Rohini star constellation. And let's go back and have a nice festival. We can give in charity to the Brahmins." It was a lie. But she did it for Krishna's pleasure. So if your mother just saw it, you can tell little lies like that. We don't, but she did. But it wasn't easy to get Krishna to stop his playing. So the primary is the Leelas. But this is also, interestingly, this is the Leela Shakti's arrangement for Agasura to come. So it's a Naimitika Leela, but it's a Leela of Krishna's killing Agasura. He's doing a nice service. He's getting the boys to go have lunch. Although he wasn't thinking. He was thinking retaliation. It doesn't say what form Agasura had from which he then manifested the serpent demon form, the snake form. And similarly, the name Baka, her name is Baki. She's Baki. She didn't assume a duck form, but Bakasura did. So it's assuming the form. What was their form before they assumed the form? That's a curiosity item. I've never seen any kind of an answer to. But there was known demons and a body of Kamsa. So he assumed that form, pretending to be something. Okay, let's see if there's some discussion. Krishna's pastimes.
Thank you, Maharaj. This was so enlivening, actually. I wrote down a few questions, actually. I don't know if you get time to answer, but...
Yeah, I wondered what you were doing there. I wondered if you were sending a message or taking a notes. But you just answered my question. Go ahead.
You mentioned that Agasura is the arrangement of Yogamaya.
Prabhupada's purport says, yeah.
Yeah, so that is... kind of interesting. Like we see that in the lives of great devotees, so apparently inauspicious things are arrangements of Yogamaya. Like we see Parikshit Maharaj, and we see that the curse which comes to Parikshit Maharaj is arrangement of Yogamaya.
Yes.
So how do we understand this from the perspective of Aghasur? Like, you know, we understand it from the perspective of devotees that, like, Parikshit Maharaj is a great devotee, so Yogamaya arranged a curse to come into his life.
Well, it's several. It goes back to Putana being delivered. She got Krishna's mercy. And because she got Krishna's mercy, her brother and sister got Krishna's mercy. Two brothers got Krishna's mercy. You know, and so why did she get Krishna's mercy? And there's three reasons that are offered by acharyas. One was her previous life. The other was she came to do some simple service. Although her intention was diabolical, she came to do some simple service. And another is, the third acharya's explanation is just something Krishna wanted. So because Krishna gave his mercy to her, by his contacting her physically, he gave the same opportunity to her two brothers. He entered into the mouth of Baka and he entered the mouth of Agha. just, you know, because of that mercy he gave to her, the service and her previous lifetime or whatever. To me, it's most meaningful that in her previous life, when Vamana knew that she had this desire, she didn't say it, she just had the desire as super soul, he granted her wish. I'd like to be the mother. If in the next life I have the opportunity, I'd like to be the mother of this child. So he gave the opportunity. And because of that opportunity, she got what she got. So that's one reason why Yogamaya is acting with Agasura. Another reason is, as indicated, it's just Yogamaya, or using Vishwanath's term, Leela Shakti, but either way, the boys have to have lunch. And it's not just like, you know, they have a physical body that's, you know, they gotta have lunch. It's just the sequence of his pastimes. And the sequence of his pastimes is the Ashtakaliya Leela. And so there's the having lunch, there's another mood where they're sitting together, a different mood than when they're playing and herding the cows. So there has to be an interruption. And that's Leela Shakti or Yogamaya. It's for the purposes of keeping the flow of Krishna's pastimes. She kind of like moderates the flow of Krishna's pastimes. Yogamaya. That's her function. And then engaging different living entities in different activities. So another activity that's being arranged is Krishna manifesting as one of the cowherd boys and calves to reciprocate with the mothers and the cows to have Krishna as their son or Krishna as their calf. So Agasura was the agent for that to happen. Because when, so it's just, it's like a big chess game. And you'll be, when this move, the six other moves later are already known. when Narada does what he does, he's in a different category than Agasura, but it's to facilitate the flow of Krishna's pastimes. And to accomplish many other things. Like, you know, kill all the children of Vasudeva Devaki, who you never know. That sounds like horrific. What kind of advice is that? But it's to facilitate yet another thing that happened, a curse, that the first six sons would die, because the Kalanemi story and the whole thing. So, it's a big mystery in one sense. But it's assisting the flow of Krishna's pastimes. And where all the dots are and how you connect all the dots to make a... Oh, that's the picture. Now I connect all the dots. We may not be able to connect all the dots. But there's purposes in each of the things that Krishna does. And he can engage bad people too. He gave liberation. He's not just... He wanted to give liberation, so he gave liberation. So the arrangement is there to give liberation. Well, then there's another reason, you know, to give the boys this incremental experience of the majesty, the Aishwarya of Krishna, killing Agasura. And then, you know, then later, the same thing as Shishupal and Agasura merging into the body of Krishna. Like, you know, why? He was bad. Shishupal was bad. And Yudhishthira asked that question. It starts, it's the beginning of a whole canto. And the cowherd boys saw, and they go back to Braj, and they tell everybody what happened at the end of the day. And then they sing songs about it. To appreciate our wonderful Krishna. So that's how Yogamaya gets involved. It's different, certainly, than great devotees like Maharaj Parikshit. But it's not different in the sense that it's just part of the variegated leelas arranged by Yogamaya. If we were Yogamaya, we probably wouldn't do stuff like that. Yogamaya, we were reading in the morning class, Yogamaya is in the category of Krishna's chit shakti, or his internal potency or spiritual potency. So she does for his pleasure, and to understand how his pleasure will manifest itself. And, you know, it's, we can understand some things, but it's too intricate and too profound for us to understand all of it. But some things. Go ahead, next question.
Next is about Krutapunya Punja, that particular phrase. I was trying to connect it to Rupa Goswami's definition of Raganuga. Is there any connection between Raganuga Bhakti and these devotees who are around playing with Krishna? Because Rupa Goswami specifically defines them as Raganuga Bhakti in connection with the followers of Rajavasis. And how do we compare Kritapunya Punja or any other Raganuga devotee?
It's not a one-to-one comparison by any means. There is some, but it's not the best example of Raganuga Bhakti. The punya is not material piety, first of all. It's the other kind. It's devotional piety, devotional, unknowing devotional service, or devotional service, to the point where one becomes a sadhana siddha. But then the sadhana, the Raganuga Bhakti is specifically where one becomes a follower of the Ragatmikas. So the cowherd boys are Ragatmikas. Mother Jasoda and Nanda and the gopis and the gopas, they're the Ragatmikas. They're the associates of Krishna in the spiritual realm that have pure love and nothing, no mixture of anything. The phrase Krita Punya Punja indicates a good fortune, and to achieve that good fortune, it's not just by accumulating piety, even devotional piety. It's something that Krishna bestows. He bestows prema. Now, who's eligible to have prema bestowed? Now, maybe, so that's the slim connection that you're asking. In Krishna's pastimes, there's two categories, at least. The nityasiddhas and the sadhanasiddhas that are being trained by the nityasiddhas. So some portion of the cowherd boys, perhaps, are those who, in devotional service and devotional service and devotional service, became perfect devotees. Now they're being trained by the nityasiddhas. But that's not what the phrase means. It's an astonishment phrase by Shukadev that says, what good fortune. Like the question comes, the same question in chapter 8, where the glories of Yasoda and Nanda are described. And Maharaj Parikshit asks, what activities did they do to achieve that position? Then he speaks something very mysterious about Drona and Dara. And then in chapter 9, it's actually, it's just their eternal associates. They're Ragatmikas. They didn't do something to get to that position. Is that what you were thinking? They did something to get to that position. Is that Raganuga Bhakti? That's what your question is? It's more of a, so because we just went over this, like, five, 6 days in a row in extensive commentary over and over and backwards and forwards. It's that statement is more Sukadeva Goswami's ecstatic expression, how fortunate they are. The emphasis is not on they did something to get there. It's not an expression of Raghunuga Bhakti. They did something to get there. Now they have the association of the perfected cowherd boys. The overlap is there are some, there's not a lot of emphasis on this, but there are sadhana siddhas that are getting that training, and there's a sliver out of all the number of cowherd boys is 10 million, according to Acharyas. When Krishna played on his flute, it was really powerful flute because 10 million cowherd boys heard it. They woke up. The sound of Krishna's flute. Pretty good alarm clock. Okay, next.
Just in connection to that, we also say Raghunuga Bhakti is spontaneous devotional service in one terms, in one sense.
Yes,
so do we consider Prahlad Maharaj and Vritrasur also as Raghunugas, or they are not following any Pragatmakas, so we don't consider them as Raghunugas?
It's the second one.
Okay.
They didn't attain Braja Prema or Braja Bhakti, nor did they follow the Ragatmika Bhakta. They're attained by Kunta. Okay?
Now this is about, you also mentioned that Krishna used to kill one demon at 11 o'clock. And
I just repeated what the Acharya said. I don't know what Krishna does.
So, question in that connection is, like we hear that the time is absent in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
So when Krishna is present in the material world, like here in Bhauma Vrindavan, so how is the effect of time? Is it same as in the spiritual world, or how is it?
That's a tricky question. Well, you know, the nature of time in the spiritual world is absent in the sense that time destroys things or deteriorates things. So there's no deterioration in Krishna Loka. Here, the pastimes are eternal, but there is deterioration. But the Leela is not. This is a nice topic. You got like good questions. In the morning session, this really intricate discussion from Bhagavat Sandarbha on how do we understand the pastimes of Krishna, the birth and pastime, birth and activities, you know, janma karma chame divyam. How do we understand they're eternal? Because then there's, you know, the doubt question and then the answer to the doubt question methodology that he uses. So it certainly appears in Leela that there's passage of time, but the pastimes are eternal. And then he explains elaborately how to understand the pastimes are eternal. They're eternally going on. Now your specific question was, is the passage of time in the spiritual realm identical when Krishna is performing Leela in this realm? There is deterioration because it's the material realm. But the pastime itself is not subject to deterioration. It's eternal. The trees, the birds, etc. You know, the forms of the associates of Krishna, our acharyas describe, they're spiritual forms. So Krishna's birth is divyam. What about their birth? Well, they have, it doesn't go into so much detail, but it does say They have spiritual form. They have spiritual senses. You know, does it mean they have spiritualized form and spiritualized senses? Does it make that differentiation? But that there is a sense of passage of time as we know it in its earthly pastimes. That's my understanding. And there is the eternal sense simultaneously. Like, for example, when Krishna appears is according to time as we know it. The 28th yuga cycle of Vayusvata Manu and during such and such yuga and so on and so forth, and Mothers Vasudeva and Devaki, Mother, Father, Father, Mother. That has its temporal appearance. They're actually eternal associates in Mathura and Goloka Vrindavan, or in Krishna Loka, and they appear in such a way, and it's really involved, and that there seems to be time involved in it. There seems to be the passage of time as we know it. And at the same time, there's time isn't destroying anything. Time isn't passing, it's eternal time. That's what Leela is. It's a good question. I don't know if I've satisfied you with the answer.
That's surely, yeah.
Okay.
You have.
Okay.
Because I was looking it from like two things. One place we hear we hear that Krishna lived here for 125 years. It appears like there is the effect of material time.
Yeah.
And in other place we also hear that the one night which Krishna spent with the gopis is like, you know, he expanded it as if it is like one day of Brahma.
Night of Brahma. Time is very flexible. Yeah.
One last question, Maharaj.
Yeah.
We were reading the dialogue which is going on in Agasura's mind, where he was thinking about if I can kill Krishna, what is the use of the body without the soul? So
yeah,
it seems that even demons have this knowledge of differentiating between body and soul.
So
if you can throw some light on how devotees should understand this knowledge specifically, like
how do we understand the knowledge of the demons? They have knowledge, but they're demons. Demons means they're against the supremacy of God. Very interesting description when Hiranyakashipu is having the funeral ceremony for Hiranyaksha. Boy, he's got transcendental knowledge down really well. But I want to kill Vishnu. So they don't deny the soul. They don't deny karma. They're atheists. And therefore they can do any unscrupulous thing.
So from that point of view, modern day atheists are more atheistic than those atheists.
Yeah. Well, they're smaller time actually. Because they don't have the power that these other personalities had. So, it's a Kali Yuga version of being an atheist. They're small timers. Tiny Hiranyakashipus, Prabhupada says. Okay?
Thank you very much, Mark.
This question is from Visalaksha Prabhu. So the question is it all these demons represent or made from the body of Kamsa? Since all of them want to harm Lord Krishna only, at least some of the demons are aware that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord and should not be harmed.
Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord and should not be harmed. From the demons?
Yeah, I was saying that some demons were aware that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and should not be harmed. So are all these demons made from the body of Kamsa?
Well, I don't know which books he's reading because I haven't read what he's describing. As we just discussed, maybe he wants to rephrase his question, but as we just discussed, the nature of the Sura and Asura, the divine and demoniac, and the category of demoniac is, I don't accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that's in the Asura category. So there's not Asuras that accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're not in that category. And then this idea of them coming from the body of Kamsa, I don't know where that comes from. They're spirit souls that are under his sway because Kamsa was so powerful, he subjugated them by his power and gave them a choice. Either you submit to me or I'll kill you. So they submitted to him and they were under his authority. But they weren't like born from him. They just were, pressured into or forced into submission or die. They weren't born from him. Next. That's it. You have something. Okay.
So I was thinking about how Putana, even though she had like a, not a favorable intention, but the activity she was trying to do was like a service, and Krishna accepted the service.
Yes.
And I was also thinking about in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in Patram Pushpam verse that he accepts the bhakti of the person and not the activity. So it looks like he accepts both. So in Putana's case, activity is placed more value than her intention, and in the teachings for the devotees, intention is placed more value than the activity. So he accepts whatever a person offers somehow.
Well, it wasn't just the show of an activity. There was some affection. There was some motherly affection when Bali Maharaj's sister saw Vamana. She felt motherly affection towards this little boy. And Putana similarly, when approaching beautiful Krishna, I mean, who can only imagine the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a baby form, but the beauty of Krishna, she felt motherly affection. She had some diabolical, predominance. Let me kill him. But, she had some motherly affection. And Krishna accepted that. And the whole situation with Putana is like exceptional or mysterious, because her whole thing was she was a child killer. Whatever else was going on, she's just, that's terrible. What's more terrible than that? Without going into it. Nope. If you abuse another person, it's one thing. If you abuse a child, it's another thing. Because they're completely dependent. And, it's horrible. So, what to speak of killing? It was her thing. She was good at it. She had a reputation. Maricha had a reputation for what he was doing, and Putin had a reputation for killing babies. So, it's quite exceptional that he overlooked all the bad, etc., and accepted that service. It says some special mercy. that doesn't have, you know, you try to find a rational reason for it, it's just his special mercy. So it doesn't conform with the rule, in other words.
So I was thinking about my intentions while doing services. It's always mixed, but there are times where it's not mechanical, but I don't feel like doing some services or some daily things. So then I anyway do it because Krishna is standing on my altar and I just go up and say, I'm sorry, I'm not having the intention, but I want to do this at least. I don't want to skip the activity. So it feels dry, but I wonder how is it like offensive towards?
No, it's not offensive. It'd be offensive to desist. So you're not desisting, but it's not devotion filled. And Krishna knows that. That's, you know, your statement, as you were speaking, I was thinking of another place I was visiting, and the person who was the host said the same thing. You know, different words, but same thing. I feel it's just mechanical. I do because, you know, it's a duty, and this is what we do as devotees. But, you know, sometimes I feel very enlivened, and sometimes it's quite mechanical. So your question specifically, is it offensive? It'd be offensive if you stopped. But, you know, some people stop. But they don't stop because I'll stop because that might be offensive if I don't offer with devotion. They stop for other reasons.
I sometimes feel sorry that Krishna is accepting despite, I mean, what is this kind of offering, like that kind of a thing comes with.
I understand. You know, that's the anishtita bhakti, you know, the sine curve, up and down, and sometimes and sometimes and sometimes and sometimes. And there's unsteadiness in the earlier stages of bhakti, so welcome to the club. And you regret when it's like that. It may stay down for some time. But, you know, and you're happy when it's not like that. But the essence is not whether you're happy or not happy. The essence is the purification. And thus the priti purvakam, that it comes more to the stage of offering with love and devotion. We're conditioned souls, and Krishna knows that. And he's engaging us in sadhana bhakti that's going to have its ups and downs. It's not offensive if there's ups and downs. It's just part of sadhana bhakti stage. Strive to go beyond. Anything else? Online?
Yeah. So this is from Pratibahu Prabhu. Without reference, is there a way to understand if a pastime is by Yogamaya or Mahamaya? Example, even what Indra did facilitated Krishna's pastimes with his devotees. So is this Yogamaya or Mahamaya?
One can look at what Indra did and things like that either way. It's not like, you know, Agasura gets some Yogamaya points by doing what Agasura did. Yogamaya facilitated, and Agasura was a demon. But from Krishna's perspective, there was some facility for his service. And, you know, Indra's pride wasn't Yogamaya. Krishna's kindness curbed Indra's pride. you know, purposely, explicitly, even before the whole thing happened. He knew Indra's got pride and he shouldn't have pride. Let me help him become free from pride. But it wasn't, that's not Yoga Maya. That's, you know, he was in Maya. But it, the Yoga Maya part was, yes, it facilitated several other things. That's the Govardhan, celebrated Govardhan Leela. The essence of that is not curbing Indra's pride. The essence of that is performing wonderful pastimes to, for the satisfaction and pleasure of his devotees. And Indra had a role to play. But it wasn't like a Yoga Maya facilitated role. He was in Maya. He was an illusion.
This question is from Chandana Mataji from Naperville. So this is from morning class. In the description of the choice between illusion and reality, you had mentioned that reality is not so nice in the context of Matrix, the movie.
Yeah.
Is that a reflection of the actual as well?
Yes.
And why is it imperfect if it is a reflection of the actual? Is it just our imperfect conditioning?
I don't know about the very last phrase that she threw in there, but you know, a reflection. One of the important parts of understanding the object and the reflection of the object, or the tree on the opposite side of the bank and the tree that's reflected in the water. There's no substance in the reflection. So supposing it's an apple tree, in the reflection, there's no apple. It looks like an apple. But there's no substance. You can't get nourishment from the reflection of an apple in the surface of the water. But you can get nourishment from the apple in the tree. So that there's no satisfaction in the reflection. There's no real happiness or unhappiness. It's simply an illusion. But it looks like happiness, and we want to get happiness, and we don't get reality. And that's the reality pill. it's an illusion. And that's a hard pill. And so forth. So I'm not exactly sure what's being asked. Go over the question again. So I say I can try to make my best effort to address the question.
So the question is, when you described about the description of the choice between illusion and reality, and the reality is not so nice in the context of Matrix, is that a reflection of the actual as well?
Yes, it is a reflection.
And why so is it just our imperfect conditioning?
That's part's the confusing part. She can send the question again if she wants, because it's not clear.
This question is from Amrita Keli Mataji. When I hear these pastimes, that they have the potency to remove the obstacles, the tendency or intention is really going there just to be free from these obstacles or anarthas.
Okay.
Krishna's pleasure doesn't seem to be anywhere in the picture.
That's okay.
Could you please guide how can I consciously make a shift, at least theoretically?
Get rid of your obstacles and it'll be easier. Because in material life, we're focused on problems. We're not focused as much as where we're going. You know, you're going down the path with a plan for your day or your week or your life or something. And then here comes this obstacle and that obstacle. And we just get absorbed in the temporary that way. It seems like there's no end to the temporary and the obstacles of the temporary. So, but fortunately, the bhakti process cleanses such problem-solving tendency towards what the goal really is. The bhakti process has the potency to focus on Krishna. So by continuing to hear, and yeah, like you rub your hands together saying, this is great. Just listen to these nice stories and I'll overcome my obstacles. Or I'll get assistance to overcome my obstacles. But the purpose of overcoming obstacles is for what? Which is what her question is. So that there's potency to also focus on what the goal is. Life's ultimate goal is. And that people that are involved in the material world, they're so busy trying to be the enjoyers and then trying to solve the problems that are created by trying to be the enjoyers, they don't even ask the question, what's the goal of life? And you're asking the question. So you got a good start. And continue with the process, and it helps you, the process, bhakti process, helps you focus on the goal. And then the addressing of the problems become far easier, in part because you know Krishna will help you take care of those problems. You just need to focus on Krishna, and Krishna will help you take care of the problems. Your life doesn't become a problem-solving mission. Or, you know, from Bhagavad Gita, Daivihi eshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond the difficult struggles. Doesn't mean struggles are gone. When when it's winter in Chicago, it's cold. It's not going to stop because you become a nice bhakta. It's going to be cold. The other day, we were coming from some place, and that tornado came through Rogers Park. And trees were flying around in the sky, and it was really wild. It didn't last long, 20 seconds, but you know, it was really wild. And it came real fast. So, you know, it's not if you're a bhakta, you don't have trees flying in the sky when a tornado comes, or whatever other dangers may come. But you know you have shelter, and that's the main, solace. There's Krishna's shelter, and you have that connection. And then you go pick up the trees that flew around and landed on your car or whatever you have to do. Okay? We're done. Are you neighbors? You live in this neighborhood?
Yes.
Have we met?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're finished.
We are moving to India tomorrow.
Tomorrow.